You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back. Does anybody else want to stay? Let's ride!
You know, in college, it was funny. It was just when everybody started editing video at home. I wanted to edit a porno to the Batman theme. And I downloaded a couple of these, like, you know, at that time, all the college porn sites came out. And it did it for, like, just 2 minutes. It was amazing. Best porno you ever watched in your life. Ever. Welcome to the show. Of course, this is when they were just like banging on like weight benches and stuff like that. It was just like, it was like going to the races. It was just like a derby. Just doing what you gotta do. It is quite frankly the show. Welcome to the Wednesday night edition. It is January the 4th. Today is the 4th. Tomorrow is the 5th. And then, of course, we are off for Friday, because that is the 6th. And on Friday night, if you are anywhere in the area, in the tri-state area, in the New York tri-state area, come out to Garcia's at the Capitol Theater. My band, me, Anthony, Tom, and Derek, Set the Charge, is going to be playing at Garcia's. It's going to be nuts. It's going to be a fun night. It really is. We've got a great set. Lots of new music. Some really well-picked covers. The covers are going to be just fucking prime cuts of meat. It's going to be great. And of course, it's a fantastic venue, lots of history, and that's what you do. So what are we going to do tonight, everybody? Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you for welcoming me. Well, I feel very welcomed.
I'm glad you're here. Glad you're here. You're taking a ride with us. And of course, Mike is chilling out over there. He's always usually an observer. There he is, rubbing his head. He's not feeling too well. I think he has a lesser version of what I had over the weekend. Of course, we were making out when the ball dropped, so I'm sorry for that, Mike. Stop that, you. That's it. And yeah, no, totally. I wasn't kidding about the porno. We'll go into that later on if we have some time before Alex Plitzis comes on at 7:40. We have him coming on at 7:40 because Ted Cruz has put forward an idea, okay? He's put forward legislation to limit term limits on members of Congress, which, of course, is a fantastic idea. But it brings up another issue that I wanted to have a talk about for a while, but I needed to have somebody on that I can ask questions, and that is of the 17th Amendment. And that's, of course, one of the amendments that were passed in 1913. 1913 was really just a bad year for this country's history. Mm-hmm. The early 20th century was the time that the progressive movement really came up, and it came up through the Republican Party. To be honest, Theodore Roosevelt was the first progressive president, really. But it was, as far as how it was officially introduced, progressivism goes back to, you know, Hegel and then goes on to Marx, and we can go on and on. This, that's a gift of Europe. But the 17th Amendment put the power of electing and selecting state senators to the United States Senate in the hands of the constituents of each state from which they come from. Okay? And it usually, and before that, they were appointed by the governors. So if they were, did something wrong or whatnot, they'd be recalled by the governor. Now come on back. That's it. There's and somebody else was sent out in their place. Another part of the reason why there didn't need to be any term limits, because if they weren't doing their job, the governor just said, "I think we're going to change it up. Thanks a lot for your service. Time for you to go home now." But of course, the 17th Amendment turned the Senate into a political popular vote fiasco. And talking about popular vote and all the ironies that are popping up around that, now, of course, most of the people that you see on Facebook, most of the people in your life are just lollipop-sucking lemmings. I hate to say it, because we love most of these people, but they just should not be talking out of their ass about things that are just a little bit more popular to speak. You talk about popular. Talking a little bit more, you know, on about popular trending issues instead of getting down to the philosophical nuts and bolts about what really comprises a republic, the philosophies behind that, freedom, and everything that goes along with having a free society and living in within a free society. Of course, they say, no, the popular vote needs to be honored, not this electoral college. What is that? That's not a democracy. Exactly. Thank God for it. But on the other hand, we have people like Chuck Schumer, our resident New York senator and Count Dracula himself. He's come out of his coffin every couple of days now to do interviews because he's now the Senate Minority Leader. Sat down with MSNBC the other night with batty-eyed, what's his name? Rachel Maddow. So he sits down with Rachel Maddow. And both of these dudes are just talking about what is coming up as far as appointments for Supreme Court, and of course how scared everybody is. Everybody's just very scared. We need some help. Is anybody out there? And of course, Chuck Schumer says, "Oh, don't you worry. Don't worry, little boy. Don't worry, little boy. I will save you. I will save you." And how will Chuck Schumer save Rachel Maddow and all the rest of her very scared followers and all of the other Democrats that are just very scared of Donald Trump? How is he going to save them? Well, the filibuster rule, of course. And what does the filibuster rule tell you? Well, that in Congress, okay, especially in the Senate, you need, for appointments, you need, if you want it to be filibuster proof, 60 votes. 60 votes. A supermajority of 60 votes in the Senate to be able to avoid a filibuster. Which means that you only really need 41 votes to oppose somebody, to oppose an appointment or anything like that, to be able to shut it down. You show up to the Senate chambers one day, you bring a couple of copies of Green Eggs and Ham, and you just read it for 12 hours until the session in the Senate is closed, and then it's put off. And of course, you have to do that for 4 years. You have to filibuster for 4 years to make sure that nobody gets on to the bench to fill Antonin Scalia's vacancy. Now, of course, there is another option to get around this. And it's an option that people like Chuck Schumer really, really, really are scared of, because they know that they set the precedent with Harry Reid not too many years ago of using the nuclear option to push through, what the hell was it? Was it an Obamacare? I forgot what the nuclear option was used most recently on. Anybody can put that in the chat room. Please put that in the chat room. What did they use the nuclear option on? In either case, the nuclear option allows you, they changed the rules of the Senate to get rid of the filibuster and to move all of these appointments and these votes to simple majority, the popular vote. So, the popular vote that everybody wants so much to elect their presidents, they are now hoping does not surface to appoint their Supreme Court nominations. You see how funny this is? How popular votes and checks and balances and majorities and electoral college and all these things that were put in to offset the very basic nature of humankind, which is corruption, which is political scandal, which is ideological, it's amazing what's happening right now. But you would never be able to get the ice cream lickers in our lives, the everyday suckers in our lives who are on Facebook and who have made it some kind of a side job to try to virtue signal or just signal to people around them that they're in the know and they're a really good compass for everybody around them. They want to know somebody who's really up on the times. It's me. Look at how I'm updating on Facebook. If you ask me a question, though, I might fall apart at the seams and have to resort to calling you a racist. But other than that, when you don't question me, I look really good, don't I? I look really, really firm. I look like I've been cemented in my stance, don't I? Aren't I a real, just a role model for all the children? You know, so this is just fucking killing me. It's killing me, all the irony. In Family Guy, they say if irony was strawberries, we'd all be eating smoothies right now. Well, that's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. So they want the popular vote to elect leaders that they think should have unilateral powers that the past leaders in the past have been given the chance to build up. See, Donald Trump would not be scary at all to anybody if the presidency is as neutered a position as it was supposed to be, as it is intended to be, and is only mandated to be by the U.S. Constitution. He's not a very scary guy. Nobody is if the presidency is neutered the way it was designed to be. But of course, everybody's scared about the precedents that they had set before. Because, of course, we are in the mode of doing everything we want in the immediacy of the moment to give ourselves immediate satisfaction. We masturbate no matter where the fuck it is, whether it's in our bedrooms, bathrooms, or on the Senate floor. It's just constant, instant gratification. We auction off the future for the orgasm right now. That is all it is. That's all it is with these people. And they never think that somebody who wears a different color tie is never going to sit in the Oval Office again. They really thought they were going to usher in the thousand-year Reich. They thought they were ushering in the thousand-year Reich with Hillary Clinton. And now they're scared that we're going to use all the tools that they've been abusing for the last decade. Isn't this hilarious? But people want to take principled stances. This is so beyond me. So beyond me, it's unbelievable. Principled stances. Give me a break. What's going on, Joseph? Joseph Patrick in the chat room. Chuck Schumer equals why term limits need to be a thing. We're going to talk about that at 7:40. We're going to have Alex Plitzis call in at 7:40 to talk about term limits, to talk about what Ted Cruz is introducing, and of course the 17th Amendment, and whether or not term limits is even necessary if the 17th Amendment is repealed. Those are questions I want to ask. I'm not baiting you. I don't have the answer. I want to ask those questions. And if you have other questions, please save them for when Alex is on. Put them in the chat room, and I will relay them. So let's get on to a couple of things. Number one, Julian Assange sits down with Sean Hannity yesterday. This is from Market Watch. Julian Assange, the WikiLeaks founder, revealed that Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, John Podesta, previously known to have unwisely reacted to a phishing scheme in which an email purported to be from Google, asked him to update personal information, had used this word as his password on the account. Password. That's right. John Podesta's password was password. But the Russians. Okay, a fourth grader could have gotten this. A fourth grader. In Baton Rouge. Yes, Podesta's password was password. Assange, now we have it. You can go and check out the clip. I have another clip from I have a couple of minutes of this interview that I really want to sit down and listen with you guys. We're going to do this just right now, but I want to read this for a little bit more. Assange did not elaborate significantly on the revelation, nor did he specify whether the password had simply been typed out or included other characters. But here's what GadgetDoc had to say. GadgetDoc gave me, the password was, he did use the at sign with the A and a letter zero with the O in password, to be exact. And this is GadgetDoc's words exactly. It gets better, Frank. That also tells us that their mail exchange server, their Active Directory, wasn't set up to change their passwords every 30 to 45 days. They had a non-expiring password BRO. I don't know what a... can you, in the chat room, GadgetDoc, put what BRO means, aside from bro? They had a non-expiring password bro. Unless you're calling me bro, I don't know. So what does this mean? If this means that anybody that had their password compromised on the email Outlook email exchanged, they are still hacked, and if they haven't already changed their password because people and their users are generally lazy, so that there may be more content to come out. That is juicy. Now, GadgetDoc went on with that. Let me see here. He said, you do understand that this is the DNC that we're talking about. We're not necessarily talking about Clinton's home server. And this is a basic end-user education. This is very concerning to me that there is such a lack of basic end-user education on good security practices that told me that on the back end, we're not dealing with an enterprise. It was probably even worse. And GadgetDoc is in IT and security. Of course, his background, he started off and he's spent a lot of time with the U.S. military and intelligence and all that stuff. But he's working currently in IT, so this is a man who knows what he's talking about. Here's a quick 38-second clip of what GadgetDoc had sent to me. He screams at one point. It's really fun. He gets passionate. Listen.
By the way, password, the way I just hashed it out, is the first thing you do when you try and hack somebody's account. That, or you do password 123, or you say new password. These are the basic things that you are taught never, ever, ever to do if you have any training on password security.
So this is just what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with incompetency. We're dealing with corruption. We're dealing with dirty dealings to such that goes right to the top of the ladder. These are not the lower rungs we're talking about. We're talking about corruption from the bottom to the top. We've got the minds of the people on our level of society completely corrupted and torn apart to the point where we do not care. We are apologizing for the worst elements of society. We're apologizing for the worst behavior of society because we expect it. We expect it to an acceptable degree. We expect it to acceptable degrees because look at the way we're living our lives. Look at society. Politics is downstream from the culture. I think that Andrew Breitbart used to say that a lot, but it's 100% true. It could have been Plato. For all I care, it's that true. Politics is downstream from the culture. Look at what we are forgiving. So that's number one. Let's listen to this. Let's listen to some of these clips now. Okay, here is a little bit from Julian Assange and Sean Hannity the other night. Listen to this. This is at the 54-minute mark. Like the next 2 to 3 minutes is really good. We'll stop it every once in a while.
What they want to do instead is conflate our publication.
He's talking about this is where we're starting off is Julian Assange is, first of all, it's great to see he's alive. Remember, for a long time there, the word on the internet was do not send any more tips to WikiLeaks until we have proof of life of Julian Assange, because after the election, he had disappeared. He had disappeared for a while. So it was good to see him alive and moving, and it's not some Peter Cushing Grand Moff Tarkin trick, okay? Although in the future, we will never know. So listen to this.
Of true information,
I'm sorry, I didn't tell you what he's talking about. He's talking about the United States government's trying to conflate in the media, conflate the delivering of true information to tampering with the actual election results. Okay, you know what I'm saying? You'll hear. But this is what he's
say: hacking, or rather, alleged hacking of U.S. Vote counting machines, and even Obama has had to admit that there has been no hacking of U.S. vote counting machines.
No evidence of that. So, but the main focus for most Americans, they are being told by Hillary Clinton's campaign, by the President of the United States, there are the Department of Homeland Security, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, et cetera, that in fact WikiLeaks was working with the Russian government to influence the election. Is that true in any way, shape, matter, or form?
No, that's absolutely false. And if you read their statements carefully, you'll see they don't actually say that. They kind of mentioned one fact here and one fact there and nothing else. In the most up-to-date information, on the 29th of December, where the FBI, DHS, White House, etc. made a statement, what is completely absent from all those statements is WikiLeaks. Totally absent. So what's going on? Well, I believe two things are going on. Number one, they don't have the evidence that WikiLeaks is involved in that way. Now, why am I confident about that? Well, because there is one person in the world, and I think it's actually only one, who knows exactly what is going on with our publications, and that's me.
Can you say to the American people?
Okay, now, what's coming up next is pretty interesting. Talking about the source and the protection of sources, and what this is going to start lending all of this back to. The Russian bullshit. Now listen, can I say this real quick? Because of course now the media is, what is this new infatuation? What's with this love of Russia? This love of there is no love of Russia. There is no reason to start a war with Russia, but there's no love and warming to Vladimir Putin. There is nothing there to love. There's nothing there to look up and to look up to. This is a man with very, very bad background. This is a man who's actually running his country in a way right now that we would all be completely horrified by. You know what's going? You want to talk about free press? You want to know where it's really been destroyed? Forget about the jailing. I mean, the jailing of the people being. We're talking about dissidents that are being shot in the street. Oh, the Irish steelworkers are back. Listen to this fucking shit. Help us. Inside the hull. We're inside the hull. Banging the wrenches on the plumbing. Holy shit. Listen to this next one. So, oh yeah, that's the other thing. There's nothing here. There's no love fest with Russia. But there are fires being lit right now. The president is trying to start a fight with Russia so that he can leave it in Donald Trump's lap. What's happening is sick. And what people are saying, good, good, and turning the other way for just because the training has kicked in to oppose and hate Donald Trump no matter what and not give him a chance no matter what, as if we're all not in the same boat, whether it sinks or it floats. It's unbelievable. You talk about the level of cognitive dissonance and the disconnect and the detachment from reality. When the people around you are watching a president do things that are antagonistic and are detrimental to the transition that we've always had at least a decent time in from president to president. And what he's doing to the state of the world and our allies and everything and the flames that he's trying to stoke and everything he's trying to do in the final weeks of his last term, it is unbelievable who is turning a blind eye, not even caring about it, and if they do know, trying to say why it's a good thing and why it's a showing of strength, even though the first 8 years and 11 months and however many weeks, he was a complete spineless slug. So, I mean, it's unbelievable to me and scary to see the apologizing and the eye turning and all of that shit go on. And meanwhile, the training has kicked in. Who do we hate and who do we explain everything away for? And the sad thing is that for people who really believe in freedom, who really believe in Republican forms of government, I'm talking about little r Republican forms of government, we are going to be the ones who are going to have bad opinions over what Trump does when he does things bad, and we're going to have good opinions on what he does when they are actually good in the efforts of promoting individual liberty and constitutional government, constitutional governance. But we are also going to be forced by these same trained ice cream licking suckers to own all of the bad things he's doing, as if we're not going to be critical of the bad things either. But you just have to be prepared for that. That's what the next 4 years is going to be about. That's what the next 4 years is going to be about. You got to be prepared for that. Let's listen to the rest of this.
Unequivocally, that you did not get this information about the DNC, John Podesta's emails. Can you tell the American people 1,000% you did not get it from Russia or yes. anybody associated with Russia?
We can say, we have said repeatedly over the last 2 months that our source is not the Russian government and it is not state party.
There was one report in the Daily Mail that suggested somebody that you are friendly with actually was handed the documents at American University
Listen
in a
this.
Wooded area by a disgruntled Democrat who felt betrayed because the revelation showed that Bernie Sanders had been betrayed and they didn't like the corruption of the Clinton Foundation. Can you confirm or deny that?
Okay, so now he's referencing to the first thing that we were all thinking back in over the course of the summer when what was the DNC aide, the DNC employee that was shot dead during the robbery when nothing was taken? There was a couple of suspicious deaths, but this one was shot dead in D.C., and everybody started thinking, we think that was the leak. And they started probing, and of course, Assange will protect. But you can see in the way that he deflects. He vehemently denies Russia and says, I always protect my sources, and takes another type of stance for this. Okay? Now, listen to this again. Remember, they said that the rumor was they're meeting in the woods somewhere and all that stuff. And can you deny or confirm this as well? Listen to this response.
Is that story
well,
true?
Well, that statement came from Craig Murray.
Friend
of mine. He's been here several times. But WikiLeaks is a source protection organization. We are famous for never having exposed one of our sources over 10 years. That's why sources trust us and they come to us. So I can't comment on other people's statements about our sources, except to say what we have said, which is that our sources are not a state party.
Can I ask you this? Have you ever talked to Vladimir?
And that's it. That's it. He says, do you ever talk to Vladimir Putin? No. Have you ever talked to Donald Trump? No. No, 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 no. On and on. So remember, everybody, the only ones who are obsessed with Russia is the left and its media. And it's not an obsession where they want it's like almost like one of those high school obsessions with I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. These are the weakest people where they'll talk really, you know, Russia. It's all this analysis they'll put into their pieces, and they'll editorialize, and they'll put together a grand scheme, and they are still, but they're running. They're so scared, and they're so worthless. This is all contrived nonsense. Contrived nonsense. Anybody that brings up the Russians is a fucking idiot. Because they will never be able to answer and get around one thing. Was the information, you know what, honey, I'm going to rub your belly. I'm going to rub and scratch your belly now, and I'm going to tell you, yes, the big bad Russians did everything. Vladimir Putin was actually the one who sent it himself. It was all of them. It was Vladimir Putin's dogs as well. Everybody in Russia was involved. They have a hacking day that we don't know about once a week. Okay? In different provinces. Let's just say it. Let's go ahead. There you go. We're going to scratch your belly. Was the information we were given true? Once you answer that, was the polling stations compromised? Were Americans voting that day, pulling the levers for who they wanted to be president? Or were Russian agents voting in place of Americans? Based on the answers of those two questions, you can kindly put your head between your knees and try to suck your own dick. I don't know what else to say. Frank, you're not going to make a lot of friends talking like that. I'm not going to make a lot of friends talking nicely either. I don't know. I'm only trying to take the side of logic here. All right? If this was completely reversed, I would have the same exact stance, although I would be also, on top of it, compounded with the frustration and the anger that I would actually have to take the side of Democrats. See, but that's what having principles is about. So aside from seeing corruption where it lay, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Can't fucking take this shit. Seth Rich, Jen Wiz, thank you so much, Jen. I haven't seen you in the chat room before, but I already love you. Thank you so much for that. Seth Rich. That is the DNC. The DNC guy that was killed in D.C. in 2016 during the robbery in which nothing was taken except his life. So, I don't know. That's it for that. Let's do this really quick. This is a 42-second clip from a feminist who wants to kill men, all men, including babies. And then after that, I want to do my thank yous. So let's go away to the sick looking woman, or whatever she calls herself, it, whatever it calls itself. Here you go. Ready?
We need to kill all men. I am sick of being a baby factory that produces more men.
First of all, who you've been producing babies? She's sick of being a baby factory. Look, everybody, this claymation character over here is sick of being a baby factory. So she obviously has very, very busy nights if she's pumping out babies at industrial levels. So I can imagine why she might be a little resentful of her lot in life if all she does is sit in basements and just pop children out. Like it's that band X-Files episode, Mike. So there's the let's go back to the baby factory. Hold on, everybody.
That will just, in the future, subjugate me. So the only answer to that is to kill male babies and just kill any man that you see, like in the streets, like any swinging dick, just kill him. Because we want the species to go on, but we want it only to go on with women in it.
So now this is where I started thinking, okay, it might be just a hoax and just be parody, because I know that there are very stupid people out there, okay? But to be able to say that we need to kill all men so that the species can go on when you need the second of two genders to actually procreate and make the species go on. Now, I know you can say, not true anymore. We can create babies from the DNA of three people now in test tubes. Well, let me tell you something. Once again, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And just because it is now possible, all of these many hundreds of thousands of years of human existence or that we have, or anything that can be considered human. Hundreds of thousands of years later, here we are, right here, 2017, and we can create babies in test tubes from multiple DNA sources. Are you telling me that that is the way that it was intended to be? Are you telling me that that is natural? So everything about these people, everything about collectivists, and this woman is a collectivist, and feminism has destroyed so much. This type of feminism especially. There's one thing about women's liberation. There's one thing about moving beyond old norms and evolving a little bit and playing on equal playing fields. Let's put that to bed. We know what kind of a direction, a trajectory we come from on this show when we talk about this shit. But this woman is part of a cult movement that is in bed with the idea of ever-expanding governments over global populations. Because they are weak on their own. They have no way to enact what they want to see the world done without overwhelming authority over the masses. They have no way of achieving any of that. They have no way of achieving procreation without the science that is funded by governments usually and subsidized by other people who produce more than these whiny little whelps do, who sit home and don't do anything. Make YouTube videos, go out to protests, and eventually, every couple of years, show up to a voting booth and, you know, virtue signal to people. Because the voting booth becomes a job for people. You go to the voting booth to make sure that your paycheck shows up, to make sure that your medical expenses are paid. That's all this is. We can go deeper and deeper into the other things that that feminism has wrought. But this is one of them. This is one of them. And I think we should also pack this chick up and send her to Pakistan. And if it is a hoax, then chicks like her. Send her to Pakistan, let her flex her girl power muscles there, where there isn't a far-left government granting temporary special privileges to whiny cunts who will vote for them, and see how it turns out. Because that's it. The only reason why people like this aren't the fringe that, you know, the moderates of us, the moderates out of all of us, stuff into lockers and tell us shut the fuck up. The reason why they're not fringe anymore is because our government has learned that if we can go far enough left and attract these people, anybody who thinks this way, and we can put them into different categories that all have the ends come through the same means, which is government, then they can be very, very useful to us. But that is until the votes are no longer necessary. Right now, votes are necessary. Consent is necessary. In the day that votes are no longer necessary, the whiny cunts are no longer useful. And what do you think? What do you do with something that no longer is useful to you? Is no longer useful to you? What do you think happens to things or people that are no longer useful to another person? They are thrown away in more ways than one. So be very, very careful. Be very careful with the things that you guys ask for. And that is why there is so much that needs to be done on the Supreme Court, especially. Whatever needs to be done, I do not care. The question was posed, I believe, by Mark Levin not too long ago when he was talking about the filibuster rule and the Supreme Court enforcing through these nominations through the nuclear option. He said, what is more important to you? Is the filibuster rule more important, or is the Constitution more important? And I say the Constitution is more important. Do whatever the fuck you can. I know that this show doesn't reach any critical masses of people just yet. And I know that people in power don't come to this show for any kind of opinion on what is being talked about on the ground floor. But if I can whisper or scream or, you know, duct tape somebody to a chair and beat it into them, anybody that has any kind of any power to influence what goes on the Senate floor. It is make sure you nominate and you push through the most originalist people you can. It has nothing to do with, just forget about these. They've got to be able to get around the gay rights questions, the black and white questions, the trans questions. They've got to be able to skirt around this and put this to people in a different way. It's not about all the bigotry and the racism and the homophobia that people are talking about. This is about preserving the individual and making the individual strong enough to be able to live in a free society with people who do not think, feel, and live the same way that they do. It may sound very nice. It may sound like a noble cause to go to bat for this and that and these rights and that rights and the snail's rights and the whale's rights and all this stuff. It may sound like a great thing and feel really, really good. But you are giving up things and you are putting responsibility, taking responsibility out of your hands and your community's hands and the future generations of people's hands and putting them into bureaucrats' hands who don't care about anything but lining their pockets and making sure that the only reason why they're in office, the consent of the people, remains in the place that they're supposed to be. The consent. That's it. It's manipulation. Manipulation of people who don't want to have control for some reason. Sadists, we've been turned into these, it's like it's one big bondage party. It's like the United States is a bondage party. We're having a fucking fucker of a time. People are loving it. Look at what they're asking for, what they're begging for. They don't get it because their cause just sounds so much better. They don't get what they're giving up. That's why I don't give a shit what people think. I don't give a shit what people think. And I don't care about the filibuster rule. This is probably the last chance we will ever have. We knew how grim it was right before Hillary Clinton was about to take office. That's what it was the day before Election Day. We knew what we were probably looking into. We knew that, free speech, forget about it. We knew this stuff was going to happen. But with what is in our laps right now through means of I don't know what, some may call it divine providence. But what's in our laps right now is probably the last chance we've got. And what's the big problem with the filibuster rule? What's the big problem with the filibuster rule? And what's the big problem with, and I got to call Alex Plitzis, what's the big problem with the nuclear option? Who's in the Senate? Who's the Senate Majority Leader? Who's the one who's got to be able to pull the trigger and have some balls? That's right, the turkey gobbler himself, Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell. I don't know who the hell is going to pull his strings to get him to be a fucking man. I don't know who's going to do it. And goddamn you, Kentucky, for all the good that you do and for all the good people that you do elect, it is unbelievable. Unbelievable to me. After all these years of ineptitude, Mitch McConnell is still not only the leader, but in the Senate at all. I think Matt Bevin, somebody was running out there at one point up against Mitch McConnell. I don't know how he keeps winning. I don't know how. And to think that he is the only one that stands between us and a originalist Supreme Court picks, maybe up to three over the next 4 years. He's the one that stands between that is very, very scary because this is the last chance I think we have. Let's call Alex Plitzis. Oh, shit. I got him. I got to get on to the Zidalza, New York. The Zidalza. Hold on. Zen Live TV. Let me see if I remember. That password doesn't work. That password works. There you go. All right. So the Skype, if you guys want to call in, now you got to call into the ZenLive.tv one. The ZenLive TV one. I got to call Alex. Hold on. All right, here we go.
Hello.
Hey, Alex Putsis, you are joining us live right now, and quite frankly, what's going on, my friend?
Not much, brother. How are you? What's going on, Frank? Listening audience, how are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. Everybody, we know that you love Alex on the show. He is a breath of fresh air for some, and others just love to jab at his thoughts. So, but you handle it so well. You love fencing. You really love fencing.
Who doesn't love intellectual sparring? You never learn anything by surrounding yourself with people who think just like you do.
Absolutely, dude. Absolutely. And we've been talking a lot tonight about Chuck Schumer. We've been talking a lot about the Senate. We've been talking a lot about appointments. We've been talking a lot about the nuclear option and the filibuster rule. We've been talking just recently, the last thing we said before we got on the phone was how scary it is that the only one that stands between us and actually enacting that nuclear option is the spineless Mitch McConnell. And now we're looking at, I want to switch gears, which is actually kind of in the same vein when we're talking about the Senate. Is Ted Cruz coming out and talking about putting forth legislation to put term limits on our representatives? And first of all, I want to know, what do you think about this constitutional amendment that he's putting forward? Ceremonial?
I personally support it. No, it's not ceremonial. I actually think it may have a decent chance of passing. Well, that depends on whether or not enough legislators actually get behind the campaign rhetoric and support the American people for the idea.
So you think that this would be an Article 5 amending?
No. So, I mean, so right now the term limits for members of Congress are stipulated in Article 1 in the Constitution. The 17th Amendment amended the Constitution, or particularly language in the Article 1, where members of the Senate actually used to be elected by the state legislatures, not directly elected by the people within states. That changed back in, I think, 1913 is when that amendment passed. They tried this once before in the 90s just to do it through action, because there's also clauses in the Constitution that say that, the Congress, both the Senate and the House, can make their own rules governing their elections. But the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision in 1995, ruled that that doesn't mean that they can overturn clauses in the U.S. Constitution that stipulate how long members of Congress will serve. And it says 6 years for the Senate and 2 years for the House, but it doesn't say that there are any limits on that. And therefore, the American people need to have that say and not the Congress. So basically that means it would have to be a constitutional amendment. So for Cruz's act to go through, it would have to pass a majority in both the House and the Senate, and then it would have to be ratified by 3/4 of the states. Congress currently had an 8% approval rating not that long ago. If left the American people and the states to ratify, I think there's a pretty good chance of ratification. It just becomes a question of whether or not it would actually make it out of the Senate and the House, whether some of those comfy career politicians would want to place those limits on themselves.
No, that's what I think would not happen. That's why I'm asking if this has more of a chance to be passed through the state legislatures, a convention of the states.
Convention of the states.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily a better chance. I think a convention of the states might be harder to call. Okay. At this point. I think the real issue was when Mitch McConnell has been asked about this before, because he controls the legislative agenda in the Senate. He said that there are term limits placed on members of the Senate, and that is the American electorate, that they have that decision every time they vote. So he certainly, at least at this point, does not appear to be in favor. And being that he controls the legislative agenda in the Senate, the chance of that bill seeing the light of day are pretty slim, unless President Trump tweets about it, because while Schumer made fun of him this week for his tweeting, it took one tweet from him and the backlash that followed for the House Republicans to back off the idiotic idea of gutting the ethics panel. So,
oh, yes.
You know,
oh, yes.
The, never underestimate the power of Trump and the people that he can energize.
Well, let me ask you, and absolutely, we were actually talking about the Ethics Committee last night, and I wanted to talk to you and ask you something about the 17th Amendment. But before I ask you about that, let's go to just a really simple opinion question about what do you think the chances are that we are actually able to get a decent Supreme Court pick through without the nuclear option, or do you think well, let's just ask that.
Based on the rhetoric we heard today from Senator Schumer, I think it's going to be exceptionally difficult.
Okay.
The Democrats, and very rightfully so for that matter, I mean, if you kind of look at it from their perspective, feel as though a Supreme Court seat was in fact stolen from them. You know, the president has the right to nominate a person to fill a vacancy on the Supreme Court, which, by the way, the Constitution only calls out the fact that there'll be a Supreme Court, that there's a Chief Justice. It doesn't stipulate the number of members of the court. It's one of those things that's evolved over time. And basically said, if I can paraphrase him correctly, that he has a hard time believing that President Trump would nominate somebody that would get both Republican and Democrat support. And, you know, to get that filibuster-proof majority. And they feel like, you know, the seat was stolen from them, that President Obama had the vacancy. There was a year left in his term, and based on historical precedent, Merrick Garland should have been given at least a fair hearing, even if there wasn't a vote, but there wasn't even a hearing. So the Dems want to stick it to him.
So with Mitch McConnell not even, you know, bringing this up and being mm-hmm. such a stickler to the point where we're not even having a hearing, it shows at one point where it looks like he's got some balls and they're not even going to entertain the thought. But on the other hand, now that we are looking past the transition and all of these new nominees are coming up, he doesn't seem like he's going to be willing to go nuclear either. So it's like, what is anything that these people do not just a dog and pony bullshit show? I mean, do they really want to get anything done, or is it just a show? What is it?
So I think they would like to get something done. It's a matter of literally politics, which is kind of, you know, ridiculous to say. We are talking about politicians. The Senate will be controlled by the Republicans as well as the House, barring any unforeseen deaths and, you know, people leaving for whatever reason, getting a presidential appointment, for at least the next 2 years. The Senate for at least 2 years, and the House for 2 years, through the midterm elections. At that point, the American people will have the chance to have 33 of the U.S. senators will be up for re-election. They'll be voted on, in addition to every single member of the House of Representatives. So it's possible, unlikely, but possible that the House could flip in a couple of years. More plausible that the Senate could flip because there's a lot of vulnerable Republicans coming up. So I think if you're Schumer, you're sitting there saying to yourself, we don't control the Senate now, but we sure as hell will potentially in 2 years. So all we've got to do is fight. As long as we fight this off for 2 years, we can regain control of the majority. Then we control the legislative agenda. Then it's not even a matter of the nuclear option at that point, because they won't even control the legislative agenda. So McConnell really has 2 years guaranteed at this point, if he wants to go nuclear, to get that done before there's a chance Democrats can take control of the legislative agenda, and then the nuclear option doesn't matter because Schumer can just say we're not holding hearings, just like he did to Obama. But if you think about it, the reason that this issue was not voted on, the Republicans were horrified, is that, you know, the only check against, you know, the liberal expansion of government and a lot of the other, you know, key issues that have, you know, troubled Republicans for a century since whenever Democrats were in power, were only really checked by the courts. And the balance of power, potentially for years, you know, decades, if not a generation to come, is dependent upon filling that seat. We really have an ideological 4-4 split on the court right now between liberal judicial thought and conservative judicial thought. And that empty seat really represents the balance of power in the third separate but equal branch of government. So if Schumer were to allow a conservative to really fill that seat and provided a young conservative like John Roberts, who's in his 50s, presumably, you know, your average Supreme Court justice lives into their 80s, for at least another 30 years, that seat remains conservative. You have Justice Thomas, who's getting older, but now you've got Justice Alito, Chief Justice Roberts, and then potentially a third person who could be in their 50s. I mean, you could. I mean, the same thing. Now look at President Obama's nominees in terms of just Justice Sotomayor and then Justice Kagan. They were also in their 50s as well. So both parties have started to look for younger people because they've wanted to have an impact on the court, and they realize their legacy may be well beyond their 4 to 8 years. It'll be, you know, what do those people on the court do for maintaining, you know, their viewpoint on the law? So Schumer's a lawyer. He's been, you know, he's a well-versed attorney. He's a consummate politician. So he understands the ramifications of that getting in. And more than anything, the Democrats really look at this as a stolen seat. They look at this as their opportunity to get back at the Republicans. So this is going to be a circus for the next couple of years.
Ann Caparato in the chat room, he put the splits in the chat room. He said 22 Democrats and 11 Republican seats up for grabs in 2 years. He then attached his own opinion to that, saying, I think that the Republicans can get a filibuster proof if they play it right. What do you think that is all dependent on? Obviously, it's all dependent on what messes Trump does or does not get himself into in the first 2 years, obviously. Anything else unforeseen?
I think he's right. The numbers sound right to me. Historically, members of the president has always lost seats in the Congress during the first midterm election. Historically, it's always how. I think Bush, during his first term, might have been one of the rare exceptions to that. But traditionally, that's just kind of what happens. I mean, Obama got decimated, and it's the way it works. So if you look at historical precedent, then yes, if Trump, you know, has a massive screw up of some kind, you know, if the bottom half of the economy actually does end up falling out, you know, because we didn't have a true bottom out during the recession because of the quantitative easing, you know, the cash that was flowed in, we're still due for some sort of market correction at some point. Probably won't be for over a year or so, including the real estate market. Any one of those types of scenarios where the economy takes a real significant dip, Congress does something really, really stupid. The Democrats, quite frankly, just get so pissed off at the prospect of having lost this election to Donald Trump, you know, and they mobilize in significant numbers, that could happen. You know, the more interesting thing to look at, and I haven't seen it in detail, to be honest with you, and if he's got that kind of information in the chat room, he may have a better look. The last I had heard, I think there, even though there's 22 seats up, there's a difference between those 22 seats being in places like California and New York for a Democrat, and then that Democrat being in a pretty moderate or if not right-leaning state. So if you look at the 22 Dems and the 11 Republicans that are up, I believe, last I heard, if correct, that there's a decent number of Republicans who are going to be vulnerable, who are up for re-election. So it's not like they're all coming from those states where it's, you know, pretty guaranteed that they're going to keep their seat.
Okay, well, last question of the night, because then I have to say my thank yous and I have to get into a band practice. But
it's tough being popular, Frank.
I just can't wait to get home and just eat. That's all I want to do right now is eat. Okay.
I don't blame you.
But aside from that, the 17th Amendment.
Hmm?
If the 17th Amendment were repealed, I saw some people on Tumblr today saying that if the 17th Amendment alone were repealed, term limits really doesn't even make a difference in many cases. Because, you know, if a governor doesn't like what's going on, he can just recall the senator, send somebody else out there. What do you think that the repeal of the 17th Amendment would actually have as an impact on this country and on the gridlock and the bureaucracy that's created in Congress?
Well, I think you're looking at potential further polarization.
Further.
You know,
because that was my this was the thing that popped up with me. So let me know if this can,
my opinion anyway.
Well, my first thing was, the first thought that came to my head was that if you have this scenario where the governors are picking your senators, and the governor is from a state like New York or California, I mean, as long as the state is hard blue or hard right or hard red, they're going to stick by their team anyway. So it almost seems like it doesn't matter to me.
Take a look at the gerrymandering, though, that's taking place at the state level for congressional districts. If you repeal the 17th Amendment and then the state legislatures would be to the ones who, you know, directly elected senators to the Senate, because that's what happened before the 17th Amendment, Republicans control almost, what's it, like three quarters of the state legislatures or something, because the way that they've drawn a lot of the, you know, the districts. There is no way in hell that the Democrats would ever allow that to make it through enough states in order to come into law right now, because essentially you'd be basically handing over control of the Senate to Republicans in even larger numbers than they are right now. So I think you'd have a hard time finding enough Democrats to support a repeal of the 17th Amendment for that reason, that this discussion even becomes a moot point.
Okay, gotcha. And one last thing before we go. Max Sancaparato just added into the chat room that 10 of the Democrat senators that are up for re-election are from states that Trump won. So that could be something to take a look at, too.
There is something to be said for that sometimes. But if you look at the correlation between sitting members of Congress being defeated and then that state having previously voted for a president of a different party, it's not as significant as a statistic as you would think if you go back and look at that. Mm-hmm. I do, however, agree with the comment that was made by that same audience member, that there is potential that you could get a full filibuster-proof majority. I mean, if you really keep this level of energy up that really got all these people out to the polls, and you really end up energizing those people who have been disenfranchised by continuing to bring jobs back in the country, you know, the Ford move and some of those other things, you know, it could very well happen. And, you know, I'm sitting here quoting things like, you know, in the past, presidents have lost a lot of seats in the first midterm. But that's the same type of information that was used in trying to evaluate this race with Donald Trump running, and how many people, including myself, were dead wrong. You know, virtually nobody got this right. It's completely unprecedented, his campaign, his presidency, and the way he's conducting himself. So, I mean, I think we're really looking at all the other variables, and no one really knows what he's going to do or what impact that's going to have.
Alex, thank you so much for joining us tonight, man. I will get in touch with you soon because I'd love to have you back to talk about a number of other things, including the saber rattling between Obama and Russia. All of a sudden, he's found balls, it seems. How convenient. And the other thing is maybe a little bit about Israel and the UN as well. I'd love to have you back for both of those.
That sounds like a plan. Love to talk about it.
All right,
man. Love to hear with the audience. Thanks.
Oh, definitely. Oh, they're going to want it. They're going to want it, man. All right, dude. I'll talk to you
soon.
Thank you so much.
All right. You too, brother.
Later.
Bye, guys.
Okay. So that is our good friend, Alex. Good to have him on. We have to talk about a lot of stuff tonight. And here's what I want to say before I get off. Before I get off and before I go, I want to thank the people. And now, if you enjoyed yourself tonight, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles at you. And when you're laughing, the people that make this flow, all of my supporters and friends and members of the show, members of the writers of Gaslight, this is all of yours as much as it is mine. Trust me when I say that. I am just honored to be able to be steering the bus over here. And of course, the bus needs gas and all that other stuff to survive. So your support beyond the conversation and the interaction in this amazingly lively chat room, while everybody else is debating the topics of the night, Gadget Doc is doing tarot card reading for people. This is like a fucking nightclub in there. It's a really weird nightclub, but I like it. I got to start packing some hookahs on the air, too. We have to have more hookah nights. I haven't had a hookah in a while. But your support means everything. So if all that you can manage, if you like this program, if you like the show, please share it with people. Friends, family, enemies, anybody you think that would enjoy the content of the show. The Quite Frankly podcast is listed on all major platforms. Even if you listen live every night, do me a solid. Head to iTunes, search Quite Frankly, subscribe, leave some stars, and review it, okay? That's it, 45 seconds, and it does so much for the visibility of the show on the iTunes charts. It's just no joke. But for those of you who have a little bit extra to give, head to patreon.com/quitefrankly and become a Patreon patriot. I'm writing all of my letters and sending them out next week. This week was, I'm just so busy with preparation for Friday night's show, that I'm gonna start getting those letters out tomorrow. So I mean next week. So you have a shot right now to get in on the 1776 or the 1984 club for those letters for January. So please become a supporter. We do 5 live shows every night. Not every night. Every week. Okay? And as we hit different goals, we're going to add more shows to the monthly broadcast, including a midnight show. We start expanding the show to an hour and a half, 2 hours. Then we start traveling with the show. If you know business owners, all American business owners who have some kind of e-commerce where people from all over the country can buy their products, and you think that we would be a good fit for them, introduce our show to people that you know who have businesses. We would love to have bigger sponsors to move this along. Other than that, if you're not a business, if you don't have anything big to give, give a dollar. Give 50 cents. I just want to see the supporters number on Patreon go up, up and up and up and up. And I told you, once we get to 150 supporters, I'll do a topless show. You guys ask for it, I'll do it. I don't give a shit. Okay, we'll do it topless. And we'll do it live. Fuck it. But now I want to quickly thank all of my bosses, starting with Michael Wells, Matt Smith, Nikki Solis, Andrew Dame, Laura Veris, Perry and Stacy Little, Mike May, who made our tremendous high energy intro, Sean Collins, Christian Peppas, Max Ancaparato, who you heard a lot from tonight, Rob Corrado, L.S. Dan, who's in the chat room, who started off my precious metals stockpile with an ounce of silver. Thank you so much, my friend. Rudy Escarcega, Jackie Milam, Eric Reitz, Whitney McShann, Pierre from Normandy, Tony Federici, who has caught my cold as well. He said he sneezed about 300 times yesterday, Matt. He said it's all over for him. We're human. Said he's been sneezing nonstop.
You got everyone sick, bro.
I don't know what's going on.
You got everyone sick.
Thankfully,
except for me.
Yeah, I know. You've been holding out. Don't worry. I'll jizz in your eye before you leave.
Good.
No, I've already put the antibodies. I've already. It would be good, strong jizz. At this point, if I were to jizz on anybody, the antibodies would actually fortify the person. So actually, I should put my jizz on eBay and sell it as a vaccine for the cold.
It's the cure for AIDS.
That's it. Okay, Matt DeFabio. Brad Meyer, StephanieKBeauty.com, Jenny Lee, Kate McCallum, Brian O'Connor Jr., Marianne Hart, Bren Antilles, Koss, our good friend John, thank you, Koss, Stephanie Evil from Gaslight.tv, and our good man, Ryan V, Ryan Valorum, Ryan Chancellor Valorum, Chancellor Ryan Valorum, another Star Wars reference. Thank you guys so much. It was a great show tonight. I can't wait to get it up on the iPod. On the iTunes and all that. Love y'all. Love y'all. Ann Caparato, Judge Napolitano for Supreme Court. I surprise. Yes, absolutely. Let's do it. All right, guys. Have a good night. Be good to each other.
Necessary for the minds and souls of us all.